Okay. You wait a little bit to see if others join us on the webinar calling in. Okay. Maybe while the folks are waiting on that, then we can get started on our panel. Start launching off the slides. Jeff and Duncan, are you seeing the slide deck?
Yep, you got it.
All right, perfect. All right. So thanks everyone. This is the eighth meeting for the Demand Management Working Group for the subset of the Tehama Groundwater Commission. My name is Stephanie Sepore. I'm with the Consensus Building Institute serving as facilitator for this meeting. And before we get underway, just for the benefit of folks who might be calling in and listening in, let's just do our regular round robin of introductions. And so I went to Stephanie, let's go to Justin.
Justin Jensen, Deputy Director of Public Works Water Resources for the county.
Adriana Andrika, Engineer Tech.
Hal Crane, Groundwater Commission.
Steve Grunewald.
Bill Warr.
I'm Michael Ward, Groundwater Commission.
Van Myrie.
Ian Turnbull.
Todd Ewing, Groundwater Commission.
And Eddie in the back.
Oh, Eddie, please help.
Perfect. Thanks, Eddie. And then Duncan and Jeff.
Duncan McEwen with the RI Economics.
Yeah, and Jeff Davids with Davids Engineering.
All right, regular participation procedures. Again, that's being inquisitive, creating space for each other, asking questions, and then folks who are listening in, just speaking through the logistics, you know, one person speaking at a time. It sounds like that the owl's not picking us up very clearly, so it's good to like, speak loudly towards the little owl guy in the middle, so trying to remember that. And if you can, remember to state your name so who's listening and knows who's talking. That's an extra plus there. So normally we just do a recap. So our meeting setup back in February, just as a reminder, we had Duncan and Jeff come to present and give us an overview for developing a demand management program, particularly thinking through like within our GSPs and SIM implementation. So they helped us through thinking through that. They presented several concepts and examples there. So setting us up to be thinking through, like, okay, now that we've had some good discussions on, you know, better understanding things like our own groundwater conditions and et cetera, like with the like, with the polygons and things like that, start to pull all these ideas together and we start to kind of think through, like, okay, now that we've learned some things and we have some examples to pull from, kind of what's next. In earlier March, we met with Ad Hoc to kind of process all of that as well. And so they gave additional guidance to the technical consultants. And so they came up with the outline of this framework document. And today they're going to have the table of contents for that, and they're going to walk through the more details of within that. But we wanted to just share the table of contents to not overwhelm you with lots of information. Let's see, Justin, Duncan, Jeff, anything to kind of add just to kind of jog our memories of what's occurred since February? Okay.
Not right now.
Okay, so again, like kind of tracking, like I had mentioned, that there was a lot of exploration as you can expect when you're trying to like gather various info and kind of generate ideas from that, so you can start making some informed decisions, start to generate some of these what we call like packages. And so we're now in that like in that kind of middle ground of like, well, let's start to pull things together. Let's start exploring. So that's kind of the stage that, that we are in right now. So progressing on through. For today, it's kind of like two major things. The first one is going to be, we'll hand it over to Duncan and Jeff to go over that, that framework document outline, better understand what's in that document and kind of thinking through how we'll use that. And then we'll have to take a step back and like and kind of reevaluate, you know, where we're trying to go. What's that now kind of updated, revised timeline now that we know more? And thinking through kind of like how we might proceed. There's using the framework document, what's that going to look like? There's also thought like, we have enough information to start putting some ideas down on paper. So can we also move forward with a straw proposal development there? Anything on any else you want to help state at the stage?
I think keep rolling.
All right, let's keep going. Actually, and so Doug and Jeff, do you want me to hand it off to you to screen share? Or would you want me to just run?
Either way, I guess I can share and then we can steer. Let me try to do that on my end. Oops. Let's see. Send request. Let's see here. Is that, can folks see that?
Yes.
And does that make my head and Jeff's head smaller on your screen?
Please.
Your heads have disappeared, but I can see you.
Oh, good.
Great. All right, even better.
All right. I think we came, well, yeah, it's good to see you all virtually. Sorry to not be there in person, but I think this is we've got a shorter, kind of punchier update based on the prior conversations that we've had and I think where we're at and where we're headed. So we split this up into three topics, just quickly review what we discussed for the demand management program framework, kind of what that is and what the steps are for developing it. You know, we've, you all have met whatever this is. Is this the seventh time, Stephanie, or eighth? What, you know, like there's a whole bunch of history that we've looked at and we're trying to roll some of that good work into, you know, kind of molded into what a demand management framework could look like. And we got to talk about timelines and kind of what the steps are to setting that up. So in that, the second item is that we've put together a outline for what a framework for a program looks like. And it's not the answer. It's not, you know, none of the technical work has been done to stand it up. Well, some of it has in your prior iterations on this, but it lays out the conceptual steps that you need to go through to stand up a demand management program. And then we've got time for discussion and, you know, please feel free to jump in at any point that when Jeff and I are presenting here, just make sure that you speak up because we were picking up Stephanie pretty good, but the rest of the room is a little, it's pretty quiet on our end. Okay, so quick recap of, actually, before I do that, Jeff, did I miss anything on the background and recap before we jump into stuff?
No, this is perfect. Yeah, let's roll.
Okay. So just a quick recap of what we discussed at prior meetings. So I think, you know, remember just kind of framing this out. We're talking about, we're talking about this step up here, putting together a demand management framework. Like, what are these different components? What are the things that we could do? As we're putting that together, we got to be thinking about what actions that the program would result in at the farm, right? You know, so going back to the example that we used, last month, it's, you know, fallowing is an outcome potentially, depending on how a demand management program is structured. It's not necessarily a demand management program, right? You're not going to tell somebody to fallow their land. You would set up a structure that might result in that decision being made in some areas or not. And that's kind of what guides the framework development. And then we're also thinking about what the program outcomes are. The meeting prior to the one that Jeff and I came to, you talked extensively about economic impacts and looking at some of the stuff that Calusa had. That's important to consider as you're designing a program so that you're thinking about fairness and equity. We also discussed how you measure water savings. So having an accounting framework, just a basic kind of understanding of what the inflows and outflows to the basin are, and how you account for those components. That's really important for measuring the outcomes of the program. And, you know, and some of the other considerations like fairness and kind of feasibility and what different actions cost. So we're thinking about all, you know, kind of across these three different levels, but really what we're trying to get done in this program document is this first box, right? We're trying to stand up the framework for the program. So Jeff, before I switch, is there anything you want to add on that background?
Nope, nothing to add, Duncan, thank you.
Cool. So what we discussed, and I think where we arrived at the last meeting and some of the subsequent discussions is that, you know, we're really thinking about some type of hybrid, what we would call kind of a hybrid demand management program setup, where there are some incentive-driven components. Maybe that's a fallow bank type concept, for example. And then that's being developed in parallel with what you might think of as more mandatory or restrictive options, like standing up an allocation system. And so back to this idea that, you know, you need some of the fundamental underpinnings to think about developing either of those types of programs. You're going to need some information on the basin economics to design, say, a fallow bank type in program and figure out what incentives could be. And you'd also need to be thinking about, like, how do you actually account for water so that you can quantify water savings? And obviously that accounting would also help inform any type of allocation system. And I think what we discussed previously is that there's a desire to focus on the incentive-driven options and work on the allocation system kind of in parallel, and then you'd potentially have an implementation plan with some appropriate triggers or thresholds where you would pull certain actions into the implementation phase. And this is kind of getting a few steps ahead of us down the line, because you're still at the point of, like, let's set up the program framework so that we know what those options are. Then we figure out what the triggers are to implement those different options. So the way this development is working is really three steps. We're here, this demand management framework, and this is what we're scoped to do right now, is develop a technical memorandum that's outlining a general program. So it's kind of this program concept. I'm going to go through an outline for a table of contents for that tech memo. We do have an annotated version of that tech memo that we're working on, or an annotated outline of it that has a little bit more detail, and we can talk through those steps today. That framework document would inform development of a work plan. So, you know, this is where you would need to do some of the analysis, you know, continue with the outreach, design some of the program components, think about what an allocation accounting system looks like, think about what the economics are, and that would go into a work plan, and that would include an implementation plan. And then the last step is implementation. So it's, again, it's kind of a step down the line. Once you have a work plan in place, then you would, you know, start to think about actual implementation of different program components. So is that making sense to Jeff on the line or folks in the room? This is just the recap of where I think we've been, what we've discussed, and where we're at today. And that's really, today is going to focus on this tech memo outline. Hearing nothing, I'll keep moving. I'll assume silence is means we're all on the same page.
Not seeing anyone making faces. So yeah, keep going.
That's good. Yeah. And I've got the safety of the computer between me and you. So if anybody's really not happy. all right. So tech memo. So this is, again, we're here today to talk about this framework outline and what the components are. And I think, Stephanie, does everybody have everybody's got this document? I've sliced it up and just pulled pieces of this outline into the presentation, but you should have access to in the folder that Stephanie shared. Perfect.
There's like a two-pager that has a kind of an introduction cover letter, and then on the back had a table of contents, but this is the document that Duncan's referring
to. Perfect. So you can see that all, and then we've just blown up pieces of it on the next few slides here to slice this up, and me and Jeff will bounce this back and forth. Okay, so the outline for a demand management framework is split into, what is this, about six different sections. So we've got some overview and background. We'll talk about that. Baseline information and analysis that you're going to need to stand up a program. A lot of this work's already been done as part of the GSP. Then we can think about global elements that are going to apply to any type of demand management framework that you stand up, right? So the thing I keep mentioning, some of the economic and financial analysis, as well as an accounting system. Like, those are underpinnings of any demand management program that you do. You need to figure out how you do things fairly and who pays for stuff, or if you've got external funding, how you use that. And you need to have a system for how you're measuring water savings so that you're actually showing that the program is achieving some reductions. And I know we discussed that a bunch at the first meeting that we were at. I don't remember if it was Hal or Ian. Somebody had flagged that, right? Like, well, how do we know?
Your audio was cutting in and out. Jeff, were you experiencing that, or is that on our end?
I didn't experience it at all, Stephanie, so I think it might be you guys actually had a few glitches kind of during the introductory comments kind of in our direction as well, so it might be a...
Oh, if the internet is connection is unstable, sign. So,
Come back in, Stephanie, or are we still hurting a bit?
You're still good. Let's turn off Jeff, Duncan, and for us as well, let's turn off our videos.
Sure.
You're still screen sharing. That's all fine, but that will save us some bandwidth. So keep on going, and we'll kind of monitor how clearly and consistent the audio is.
Okay. Do I need to step back 30 seconds or a minute, or what was how long ago did you guys tune out?
Yeah, the last 20 seconds, if you can reiterate.
Okay. So just recap, as we have this demand management framework outline, which is, again, this critical step, this piece that we need to get to Justin and ultimately get to the board, as I understand it. It's split into six sections. So there's an overview and background, like, what are we doing? What's the need? And I'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. Then we've got some baseline information that you're going to need to stand up the program, some, information on the water budgets, and mostly stuff that's been prepared in the GSP, bringing that in. Then we've got some global program elements these are things that are going to apply to any component of a demand management program, whether it's something that's incentive driven or an allocation system. So the two that I keep highlighting, again, are, some economic and financial analysis and an accounting framework, so that you're able to look at kind of these fairness considerations and also able to ensure that the program is resulting in water savings. And then we've got a section for incentive driven elements, and then the allocation element. And then the final piece would be an implementation plan. So, what are the next steps? How do you do adaptive management? What does that look like for the whole program? And so that outline is on the right side of the screen. It's also printed, I think, on the document that you have in front of you. And then all we've done on the next few slides is just slice out these six pieces into different, into the, just to blow them up, and we can talk about them one by one. So the first section is a overview and background, like, what's the program purpose? What's the need? And then importantly, I think something that we haven't discussed, but maybe you all have, and I've missed it in earlier meetings, is just laying out some kind of guiding principles. Like, what are the things that we're trying to do for as we're standing up a demand management program. And, I think first time I was out, I presented some of the stuff that NAPA was working on. And, like, one of their guiding principles was, really emphasizing historical investments in water management and water conservation practices on farm. Because it was like, well, we know that when the stakeholders, growers were providing feedback, it's like, we know kind of around the valley who's already made a lot of these investments in technology and have, already implemented these practices. And we think it's important that we look at some of those investments and value those as part of standing up a demand management program. I was like, okay, so that was one of maybe six guiding principles, and perhaps the most important one, that was included in that NAPA program. And if you look at like Madera and some of these other areas, the guiding principles look a little bit different. So you would have just a section here that lays out like, what are we trying to do? And what's the North Star for doing it? And then we give an overview of what the program is going to be and the development steps and just an overview. I mean, really the need for it is GSP, it's Sigma, right? And it'd be an overview of Sigma, what the sustainability conditions are in the basin. And that'll lead us up to a discussion of the different options for developing a demand or the different components of developing a demand management program. And this would result in the conclusion that we've already discussed at the prior meetings is that we're pursuing this hybrid approach with some incentive driven programs, as well as a allocation concept framework that's being stood up at the same time. So I think that's all pretty intuitive. Second section deals with baseline data. So this is where we start to get into the technical information that you would need to stand up a program. Again, most of this stuff exists, with maybe the exception of some of the demographic and economic information at the basin level, which you could pull in, relatively easily. But you've got information on land use, historical water use, water balance. That's all largely in the GSP. And then some of the sustainability conditions and indicators would get brought in here as well. So this is like, to stand up a hybrid demand management program framework, we need a very fundamental understanding of what the, inflows, outflows from the system are and what the targets for management are. Something else that we might include here, you could also, I know those that tuned into the Corning Subbasin meeting, Valerie Kincaid gave a presentation that I've heard her give a number of times. And you might bring in just an overview of the kind of the legal perspective on water rights that could fit in a program overview section as well. All right. Let me stop there. So those two sections are really just kind of framing the problem and pulling in data that's an analysis that's largely already available. Is there any questions or comments on that? I think that's all pretty straightforward. Or Jeff, is there anything you would add and want to emphasize on the accounting side?
Well, Duncan, not necessarily on the accounting side yet, because I think we'll get there with these global elements in a little bit more detail. But I did just want to reinforce the idea of these guiding principles. And I think as tricky questions come up, without some sort of formalized, principles that you've worked through and identified, and it gets to be difficult to sometimes make decisions kind of farther downstream in the process. So I just want to highlight the importance of trying to develop a set of these guiding principles that relate to fairness and equity and kind of what's most important, basically, as you're making some of these subsequent and difficult decisions here.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I don't know, Stephanie. Anybody in the room that has any thoughts on this?
Folks in the room, questions? All right, let's keep powering through.
Okay. Okay, so now we get into the meat of putting together a demand management framework. So there's some global elements. I actually had these down at the bottom of the outline initially, but we moved them up. So what are things that you're going to need to think about for any program or any program component that are going to apply regardless of what you're doing, whether it's a specific type of incentive-driven program or an allocation system or anything in between? So obviously some administration, and that's everything from, who's actually running the program and enforcing some of the program, who's going to do monitoring.
Sorry, Duncan is coming in patchy again.
Shoot. Jeff, you hearing me?
Yeah, it's coming through just fine. Unfortunately, it sounds like it's a connection there.
Did we eliminate the screen share? Because it's still showing in the upper left. To increase your bandwidth load.
That's funny. It's just screen share. We've taken off all of their video, so I'm just trying to close everything down on this end to.
Hey, Stephanie, the other way you could do it. I don't know how you're hooked into audio, but you can be dialed in through your phone, and still patched into the same, you know, you could have your audio through your phone, which would avoid any internet issues if you happen to have better cell coverage.
I don't know. Well, challenges were connected through the owl. So I think if you're coming in clearly now that I'm trying to shut down anything that might be absolutely that's unnecessary. So let's try again because you're coming in clearly now.
Okay. All right.
Go ahead.
Hi, Duncan. This is Michael Ward. I do have a general comment on baseline data. And maybe it follows under land use, and maybe economic conditions, I'm not sure. But can we get a breakdown of what our land use looks like as far as size of farms, gross income of farms, and in an effort to ultimately figure out what the impact to smaller growers could be? Or are we going there? Are we going there regardless?
So that's a good question. I think based on the discussions I've heard, this is somewhere where you want to go. And so then, you know, you can take a step back. This is a framework and a table of contents. And then within this, what actually goes in there depends on what, you know, you all and we all collectively decide as part of the demand management framework. So if impacts and equity for smaller versus larger operations is a key concern, let's say maybe that's one of your guiding principles that comes into play, then yeah, we could pull data on farm size. That becomes part of your baseline economic conditions. Maybe you add some demographic conditions as well, and it's part of your land use. And then when you're setting up the different program components, that's something that you're looking at and using to consider fairness and equity for how you're structuring a program. So for example, you know, maybe you make some decisions in the future, just jumping ahead, when you're thinking about what's our funding strategy and incentive structure for a specific element, you make decisions because your guiding principle says we want to be aware of and protect our small farmers. And that means we're going to design some of the components of this program in a certain way to avoid those impacts. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Any other questions, Stephanie?
Nope. So let's move on forward.
Okay. So we're into the global program elements. I think that's where I cut out previously. So these are things that apply across both a incentive-driven framework and an allocation-driven approach. So administration, that's, you know, who's running it, who's monitoring it, who's ensuring that you're actually getting, you know, checking that you're getting some measurable savings. If you've got money that's being doled out, who's managing that? If you're going through an incentive driven approach, there'd be contracts, right, that need to get written and executed with parties. It's kind of everything. And a lot of this gets way down in the weeds and are things that you'd be worried about in an implementation step, but you should be thinking about as part of standing up a program. Like, I'm just thinking like the Madeira programs for their voluntary land repurposing, and then what was done through LandFlex grant funds and multi-benefit land repurposing grant funds subsequent to that, there was a lot of work that went into getting contracts in place and a lot of details for just the administration of the program that that didn't get picked up as part of initial program design and are lessons that you all and others can kind of learn from in setting up a program from scratch. Then you, you know,
Stephanie.
Yeah.
I just got a text that our Zoom isn't working.
All right. I'm working with Lena right now to make sure that it was the incorrect call and was sent out. So Lena's working very quickly to get it. So we have
Sorry, Duncan.
Okay. So, well, that's a different technical issue. Y'all can still hear us. So we just don't have, now we don't have anybody else that can listen to us. That's fine. We'll keep moving. So economic and financial analysis, again, baseline information, you're going to, you know, think about fairness and equity and impacts to different users or sectors of the economy. You know, a rough implementation timeline and then maybe some action levels or triggers for different things. You know, we're thinking about this hybrid program, initial focus on incentive driven. And then when do you, you know, at what point do you pull the lever and start implementing, you know, more costly or more burdensome actions. Water accounting system, right? So I kind of see technology and for measurement and the water accounting system as one and the same. But, you know, I think when me and Jeff were going through this, we just wanted to make sure that this was called out specifically. So, you know, how are we accounting for water? This is good because it provides just a baseline understanding of what, you know, what water supply is, what sustainability means, and you know, how that looks across the sub-basin. Jeff, is there anything you want to add on these last two elements before I switch over into the different two different components?
Let's see. I think maybe just kind of for regional consistency, the way we've been thinking through the water accounting piece of this down in the Clusa sub-basin, and I think to a lesser extent down in the north part of the Yolo sub-basin, is to think about it in kind of three different buckets. So we might maybe we'll try to reflect that in the next iteration of this outline is basically, you know, what's your measurement approach? And so generally those fall into two buckets, and we talked about this briefly before, but it's, you know, remote sensing or flow meters or some sort of a hybrid between the two. So that's kind of the measurement approach. And then what is the kind of data management system and sort of all that data science, you know, so how does that work? And then what's your communication protocol, basically? How do you communicate those data to the people that actually need it for an operational decision making, so the growers? So I think thinking about it in those three buckets in terms of measurement approach, sort of data management structure, and then communication, I think is helpful and hopefully will lead to a better evaluation of the different alternatives out there in the future.
Hey, Jeff, this is, I got a quick question. Can you talk a little bit about on this water accounting piece, like how we can kind of build off what we're already doing with the annual reports? It's not perfect, but I mean, the idea is, right, we can kind of build off of existing work that we've done, and then at some point streamline it so we're not doing accounting for the annual report and then accounting for this. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, just so we're not starting from scratch?
Yeah, sure thing, Eddie. Yeah, so what we're, and this is hard to do without a whiteboard and kind of being in the room and using my hands, but basically for the annual report, we're already using remote sensing data to estimate groundwater extraction. And we're doing that at sort of, you know, what we would say a pixel by pixel level, which essentially, if you can imagine the infield of a baseball diamond, that's about 100 feet by 100 feet. And so every 100 foot by 100 foot chunk of land across the Tehama County subbasins and the Corning subbasin, and honestly, Calusa and many others up here in the Sacramento Valley, we're already taking remote sensing data of evapotranspiration and then pulling that together with data about precip and how much of that precip is going to meeting crop water demands. Importantly, we have to bring in surface water data because basically what we can solve for from remote sensing is the total amount of crop water demand that's met by applied water versus precip. And so, but once you have that total amount of applied water requirement, we don't know, absent of measurement, whether that came from surface water or from groundwater. So if we want to solve for groundwater at this kind of pixel by pixel level, we need to have data about surface water at that level. So again, I think we've mentioned this in the past, but Eddie, specifically to link to your point, we're already doing this. It's coarse in the sense of our understanding of applied surface water spatially, I think has lots of room to grow. But it is a place to start, and perhaps given, you know, maybe some small, well, perhaps the uncertainty is okay in terms of just getting started, basically, is kind of how I want to finish that. But that's a brief overview of what we're already doing, and I think what can be leveraged as a starting point for that.
Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. All right.
All righty. Yeah, so those are kind of the global elements. You know, you kind of think of those as like the some of the building blocks combined with the sub-basin data that you're using to stand up programs. And then the way we've sliced this up is split it into two sections in this framework document, one for the incentive-driven components and then another for the allocation, call it an allocation system. And, you know, you could see that obviously – you know, this we've, as we've talked about, these incentive driven components could be a bunch of different things. So, you know, you would, you know, you might have like two or three or however many you end up deciding to evaluate, of these sections. But we go over what the, what those components are, look at feasibility, you know, what can be done, how much, water savings do we think we can actually get from this? What's it cost? What's the incentive structure? How are you actually getting people to adopt it? What's the funding strategy? How are you going to get people to pay for it and have those incentives? This would include looking at grant funding and other opportunities, but would also probably include an assessment of, you know, of other funding, to support the program. What are the rules? How does it work? You know, for example, if you're doing a fallow bank, you know, is it a, you know, a bidding system? Is there a flat fee offered? Is there, you know, what's the scale of the program? How does that change based on water supply conditions? Those types of questions. You know, what do participants need to know to plan for these programs now and in the future? How do you enforce it? How do you measure? And again, this goes back to the accounting system. So, you know, how do we ensure that the program's getting some measurable water savings? And then what's the, what are the steps for implementation? And this kind of pops up in two areas, because you can have implementation tailored to a specific component, and then we're also going to have an implementation plan for the overall program, i.e. like, when do you even start working on one of those components? And then once you implement those, how do you do that? And then the last piece is adaptive management. You know, you're going to continue to get better information about sub-basin conditions and how to manage for, you know, to you know, get, implement the GSP. And you want to be able to update these programs to continue to, you know, minimize costs for water users. And then for the allocation program component, kind of assuming that you would, you know, go through some different options for how to structure an allocation system, but ultimately, you know, decide on, you know, a single kind of program approach that would be included in this framework. So the way we think about this is, you know, you start at the sub-basin level, and this ties back to the GSP and the accounting system that's already in place. So what are the buckets of water? What's the water supply that's available in aggregate, right? And then the next step is to think about, okay, how do those different buckets of water get allocated in a fair and equitable way to different types of land uses or landowners or water uses, right? And so this is where maybe there's some spatial considerations that are important, or maybe not. Maybe those get handled under the incentive-driven programs. But it gets down from at the sub-basin level, you know, you get this bathtub of a few different types of water. And then below that, how do those get allocated to an individual landowner? So again, if we take the Madeira example that you've all heard about a few times and we talked about at the last meeting, at the sub-basin level, they set a bucket of water called sustainable yield and a bucket of water called transitional water. And then they take those buckets and those get allocated to effectively individual parcels based on factors that include whether the parcel is currently irrigated or was previously irrigated or has never been irrigated. So that's kind of a simple example. And then, you know, you could see more complexity would come in at this stage with, you know, let's say areas that, you know, also have surface water, or if you've got a few different types of water buckets that you're including in your allocation, like, for example, like the semi-tropic water storage district example showed. Then the allocation rules, you know, how does that allocation, can it be used on a parcel? Can it be transferred? How can it be transferred? Is it managed at an individual area? Is it managed at a polygon? Is it managed at a farm unit? Those types of issues you would address under rules. How are you going to fund the program? You know, even for a program like this, there's still some administration. And then the same thing for incentive-driven, you would have here for allocation. How do you enforce it, monitor it to ensure that you're getting compliance and savings? What's the implementation plan? And then how do you adaptively manage it? You know, when do you adjust the allocation, let's say, in response to new information? All right.
John, yeah, this is Michael Ward. I'm kind of unsure where the costs come from. In this type of program, Is this, I would, my assumption is it's more administrative, but what other costs are we talking about?
So to stand up again for, yeah, so there's the administrative side. So let's say that the GSA is managing the program. So there needs to be an accounting system. There needs to, and that is information that the GSA is going to need to be able to monitor and track water use. And then there also needs to be a system that's available to water users, right? Maybe this is the same system, maybe it's multiple systems, so that you as an individual water user are able to track your use and understand how that's changing over time. And then there needs to be, you know, so there need to be staff and technology and a framework in place to implement that. And then you're going to need staff and labor time to stand up the program rules, right, and make sure that folks are complying with them, provide information to water users. And so a lot of this is on the administrative side for GSA costs. On the individual landowner side, costs in general might be a little bit lower, but you're still having to do something to manage your accounting system. So if the GSA is providing that information to you through some technology, right, then you have access to that. At minimum, you have some labor time on farm to manage. You know, or maybe you have your own system for tracking water use, whatever it is. So there's kind of some administrative cost on the water user. But in addition to that, there's also like the economic cost or the impact of an allocation system, right? Like, in, you know, so an incentive-driven fallow bank is basically paying for, let's say, idling land, whereas an allocation system might indirectly impose that outcome, right, of fallowing because the allocation is less than the amount of water that you need to irrigate land that's historically been irrigated. So there's an additional cost there that you might think about as part of setting up an allocation system. And then you would develop rules that minimize those costs or impacts to different water users. You know, so for example, if you're really concerned about smaller farmers, maybe you set up an allocation system with some flexibility in how that allocation can be used across parcels that's more favorable to a smaller grower. Or, you know, I don't, we can, and we'll come up with other kind of issues that would illustrate that example. But anyways, so that was a long-winded answer. So it's just to summarize it, there's the admin on the GSA side. There's some admin on the grower or the water user side. And then there's the cost of what this structure is imposing on the grower and regional economy in general. I think those are the three elements that you'd want to think about. That answer your question, Michael?
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Hey, Duncan, maybe just to jump in, because that was an excellent response. And Michael, I think one of the ways I try to explain the costs of an allocation on the GSA side, so not on the grower side, is to think about the GSA, you know, in function really becoming in many ways like a water district, if you will. So absent of the infrastructure of delivering the water, but all the other functions that an irrigation district or water district plays under the you know, underneath an allocation, basically, they have to have the grower connections, right? They have to answer questions that growers have. They have to, you know, communicate, you know, water delivery data, or in this case, groundwater extraction data. They have to, again, manage the measurement system, you know, so all those things, all those functions, again, absent maintaining and managing and operating a canal system, or a pipeline system are really functions that have to be there that the GSA or somebody has to provide, basically. So I think that's maybe a helpful way to think about what the cost would be from the GSA side.
Yeah. All righty. I mean, that brings us to the last piece here, which is really, the last piece would be, an implementation plan. Oops, I think whatever. If you look at the full outline, you'll see the last step is this, you can ignore this here. It's the, developing an implementation plan. So what are the triggers for when you do certain incentive-driven components? What are the triggers for when you would switch over to an allocation? I mean, really, I think this would be a lot of work with the team here and Justin, you know, and ultimately the board to, you know, figure out what NDWR, to figure out what you need to do to meet, you know, stay in compliance with Cigna. That's ultimately the goal. And then in areas where it's appropriate for, you know, this implementation plan would typically have things tied to other supply augmentation projects, right? Those can, you know, if you kind of think of demand management and supply augmentation as two levers, then as those come online in other areas, an implementation plan might have a way to, you know, include that as part of an allocation or back off on some of the incentive driven components as you're able to, you know, to adjust over time. So that's the overview. And we're, you know, that's the direction that we're heading is to put together this tech memo and not do the analysis and write every section, but this tech memo will explain what the work that needs to be done to get a work plan together as the next step. That's what's going to be in this tech memo. So it's, you know, it's not going to get you all the way there, but it's an important first step and is what we're currently scoped to help put together. And then I think we've been working with Eddie, and I'll kind of defer to him. It's just, I know we've been asked is like, what can be done with grant funding if that's available, you know, in coordination with Corning, and I'll kind of defer to Eddie on some of those, what the thinking is there, but just, you know, what are the things that we could pick off from a, from this outline and turn into a framework, and then what's the timeline for that work? So I'll stop there, kick it back over to Jeff if you've got anything else, or back to Stephanie and Eddie and the room.
Yeah, no, nothing on my side. I think it'd be good to get Eddie's insights on your second bullet point there, and then yeah, hopefully open it up for discussion here.
Yeah, thanks guys for putting me on the spot. Although Steve and others have been on the CSAP side, they've been like, hey, you got this funding, you know, give us a scope, give us a scope, give us a scope. So I think the question that hopefully can be addressed today and also maybe this morning meeting, but also at the CSAP is like, so here's the framework outline. But then the question would be, okay, what within the framework outline could we kind of expand on with this additional funding from the CSAP folks? And would they agree to be able to utilize that? And the idea is that would benefit everybody sort of in this area. So that's kind of tied back to next steps on spinning that out. That's my input on that particular item.
Yep.
And then the timeline, I mean, that's a tricky one, right? But we're getting pressure, I think, from the board, like, hey, there's this demand management program, and, you know, what how do we respond back to them to let them know we're working on it? Is it enough? Is it not? And that's something that I think this group needs to figure out. I was suggesting we're going to need some input from you. But is it, you know, one thought could be if we took this kind of presentation and gave it to the board and said, look, here's kind of what we're doing. This is the flow. This is the schedule. You know, is this good enough? They might say, no, we'll do something concrete in place by January. Then if that's the case. How do we get there? I don't have the answer to that.
Right. So the next kind of agenda item is really going to be delving into like us kind of problem solving that. So I think one of the first questions just for kind of Jeff and Duncan to take this tech memo to the next step is just to affirm whether or not does the tech memo, like going over the contents that Duncan and Jeff presented just now, is that accurate? Does that capture just the general items that you want to have in this framework such that it can be hopefully taken to the next stage and explored with the Corning side, seeing if there's this opportunity to use the grant funding and trying to get like these things that are working on different timelines, trying to find a way like, can we get these aligned? Can we get these funded? So putting that aside, the first step is like, is the tech memo accurate enough? So I want to open that out. And Justin, if you had anything else that you want to add for this.
I think it covers it.
I think
the next step is going to be the time-consuming
step, it's going to be difficult. And I don't see how if you listen to Valerie's presentation at the Corning South Basin GSA meeting, I don't see how you're going to do effective outreach to get people on board enough by January 1, 2006. And if you don't get them on board, then there's a high likelihood you're going to get your program sued. And it may still be anyway. But, so what's realistic? I think the January 1, 2007 or 2027 is more realistic. So for the other sub-basins in Tehama County, what we need to do with DWR to push that out. Since already January 1, 2027, which is what this is being funded by, basically the Corning sub-basin, right?
All right, so we're hearing that, and I want to flag that, we'll look back to that, because that's kind of like one of the core parameters that we're trying to work with. That sounds like that, in general, the tech memo outline looks accurate. So, Michael, do you have
a question? Speaking just for myself.
Want to check with others? And Michael, you look like you want to speak. So
well, no, I like the outline. I especially, and what I don't see, but it was, I think, in some of the answers to the questions, is how we might be approaching small farms differently. Maybe the exemptions that could be developed for small farms, or ways of lessening the impact to small farming in the county.
Mm-hmm.
Those are important. I'm a little disappointed in is that I don't see us having a program. I see as our next step is we're going to develop a work plan, but I don't see a program coming out of that. That really, or maybe I'm not seeing the big picture here.
So maybe this is a good time to transition into talking about sort of the other part of this.
Yeah, the next of the next phases. So just to wrap this up, because I think everyone's just really trying to get ready for the next conversation. Does anyone have any red flags or concerns with the tech memo? Because like the outcome of today is giving the green light to Jeff and Duncan to develop this tech memo for Eddie and Justin to take this table of contents to the CSAB meeting later this afternoon. So if this is looking good enough and get the green light and no one has like major, major concerns, this is giving the thumbs up to Duncan and Jeff. So any major concerns or...
This is Steve Brumwald.
Steve?
So, yeah, one of my concerns all along has been the cost. We've got an idea now. I think this is a good start on the technical memo of where we need to go. Probably more than enough. It's a little bit more than what I'd anticipated we would get in terms of an outline. Where's the money coming for this work? Yeah, you know, we've got an idea now of the scope, but what's the cost? Where are we at on that? We've been asking that for months, and we don't have it yet. So if we're going to be expected in the CSAB to say, let's move forward with this, we still don't have an estimate of the cost.
Cost so
for their work, or this work, where's that money coming from?
Eddie, do you want to speak to
them? Yeah, so the all this work, including the TM, which is going to be flushed out with its outline, it's coming through an outreach task. That's what's covering this initial phase of work.
Okay.
Kind of holding that $220,000 to see with, okay, now we've got this TM, pick a couple of components. What can we do with $220,000 to flush this out and develop a work, actual work plan? That makes sense. And so it's hard for us, I think.
What is meant by a work plan?
Yeah, Duncan, you want to talk about that sort of next steps? Like what's like when you say work plans, you know,
yeah,
set a groundwater demand work plan?
Yeah, so that's the demand management work plan. That's where we've done, you've done, this team collectively has done, with hopefully the benefit of some grant funding to support it, some of the analysis and work that needs to go into setting up the different components of the demand management framework. And so, like, for example, what Michael's asking about, sure, if we have a guiding principle that is we're really concerned about impacts to small farms, you would be doing some analysis of your demographics and economics on the small farm and bringing that into setting up your framework for a rotational fallowing program or a fallow bank program under the incentive driven element, and how you're designing the allocation program. So you take what this TM is like, here's the list of things you have to do, and the work plan is you've done those things, and you have a document that's there that you can then implement in the future, right? So you can pick off your fallow bank program, or you pick off your allocation program, and you actually start to implement it. And it's not that there's no work to do at that implementation stage. It's just that you've done the foundational work and made some of the foundational decisions to be able to put the program in place.
So my only concern is from that, I appreciate what you're saying. So I think you answered my question earlier. My concern. And so what I'm hearing is that I'm really going to have a document that lays out our approach to demand management. The only thing missing is implementation.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you. That's what I'm after. Thank you.
Yeah. And just to be clear, like I'll say this again, I've worked on these in a number of areas and we're still working on them. Like, I think you can get yourself in trouble if you jump too quickly to just implementation. Like we got to think these are tough decisions, and we want to make sure, you know, if you look at it through the lens of Valerie's presentation from a legal perspective, that people are on board, but also just the technical work that needs to go into having an accounting system that everybody has access to and an understanding of what, you know, the problem is and how you're managing it. Like that just takes time.
I appreciate you.
On the same note, Todd, what kind of timeline are we looking at for this technical memorandum?
That's a good question. I think, I mean, I'll defer to Eddie. I don't know what our overall project schedule is on this, but I mean, we would, assuming we get a green light, which it sounds like we're all on the same page, we would start working on this immediately and try to get it knocked out.
Eddie, do you have a... I mean, you don't have to get exact to like
2 months.
2 months, around 2 months.
That's what are we talking? Are we talking 2 months or are we talking, December?
No, not December. Sooner rather than later, because this is going to kind of build on to the next conversation.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure everybody was kind of thinking of the same lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, I think at some point in this meeting, somebody should try to give a 5-minute summary of Valerie's presentation, just so we've kind of all heard that. You know, some of us were listening in on it, but there was a whole lot of information there, and I don't think I could summarize it very well, but they need to have to take a look at that as well, just to give us that mindset to work on.
Great point. So how about this? It sounds like we've got the Duncan and Jeff have the green light to move forward with the tech memo. The goal is to get it wrapped up in the next 2 months. In the meantime, there's several various steps. Like, one of them, the most immediate, is to take the table of contents and kind of vet it with the Corning side, seeing if we can be possibly using that the $225,000 that's focused for Corning, operating on a different timeline, though. But is there an opportunity to utilize that that's going to benefit on the Red Bluff, Los Molinos, and Low side as well? So,
Big step. One question. I think Steve probably it's in his seat is like, okay, let's say they agree on the outline. Who makes the decision to go through the outline? So, what pieces do we want to fund with this $220,000? What and how far would that get us? And somebody's going to ask that question at some point. So, I don't know, Duncan, if you want to put you back on the spot here. I mean, what can we do
if
it comes today with this additional $250,000 to kind of take this and maybe develop a couple of work plans? So,
Yeah, and I think the things that jump out to me that I would start with are the global program elements. So we'd be working on the foundational data that you're going to need on the economics, demographics, the water accounting system. So that's the first element that you can that you should start work on right away, because that informs everything else that you're going to do for setting up this program. The other thing would be to start in parallel with what the incentive-driven programs are and start to select those that are actually going to make it into the plan. I mean, we talked about a wide range of examples at the last meeting. We need to figure out which ones are actually going to go in. Third piece, which relates to the baseline data, is some work on the water accounting system, so you have that in place. That's foundational because it provides everybody with an understanding, both on the GSA and the water user side, of what the buckets of water are, so to speak. And the program gets stood up on top of that. And then you would, and then actually maybe step zero would be making sure that you've got your guiding principles and everything outlined so that that can frame the rest of the work. And then the last piece would be to pick off, you know, based on time and available funding, the, you know, work on actual steps for standing up some of the other programs. And that's where it's a big gray area. I don't know how far you'd be able to get given the timeline and funding available into that last element. But I think you can get the foundational pieces there, stand up some of the core work on the core programs, and start some work on the allocation framework. Those would be my recommendations.
Add Eddie or Justin on that?
Yeah, I don't think so. And I think, don't you think, Duncan, if, you know, kind of feedback and getting from the CSAP, it wouldn't take much. I mean, the scope, we could just put together a brief TM and say, you know, our recommendations would be to do these next three steps, and here's the cost to do that.
Yeah, I think that's where we're headed. I think we're at a point where we could do that. I'm hedging a little bit because we you know, it's also, we want to make sure that we're listening to feedback from the group here to make sure that we're focusing on the things that are high priority.
And remember, the deliverable to EWR under that task is a tech member. That's it. No description. We have the money, so we just need to figure out what can we do with this program. Does Steve help you at all?
It does. That was my concern, was that we would, the outcome of this would be a product that we can take to the flood control board for submittal to EWR. Is that what I'm understanding? That's what this tech memo is going to be? Or not? What am I missing? How much closer are we to something that we could submit to the flood control board?
So I think that sort of leads us into this next bit of the discussion. So this discussion about sort of, okay, we're going to have a consultant that's going to build programmatically, you know, sort of here's the effects and here's what could be done, right? These sort of linear movements of where this could be. Ultimately, in the end, the decision of the components and what those components entail are not theirs, right? And so people from another side, which is the political side or the decision-making group sides, are the ones who say what those components are, not the consultant. And ultimately, you know, I hear exactly what Ian's saying, where you say, hey, you know, you want a lot of time to get ultimate buy-in from as many people as possible. Just to be perfectly clear, the programs that have done that and spent years now in doing so are in litigation right now. So that doesn't necessarily save you from a litigation maker. The reality is that you need to build a program with, you know, as many majors as possible to prevent litigation from being successful built into them upfront, right? So that's one key component to this. Another one is that, you know, time. And I know we've been talking a lot about this timing issue. I think that, and by the way, I'm giving you my opinion right now. This is like a fact. It's my opinion. I firmly believe that you can set up a program that allows you to see the outcome of some of these currently engaged court battles prior to final implementation, but still has all of the necessary information required to have a complete full working plan to put in front of the board and DWR. And the way you would do that is to do something like set an implementation date. So you create all of the program and you set an implementation date that is in the future. So here is the program and here is the day in which, say we have triggers that create a programmatic outcome, a requirement. Here is the date in which the very first date in which those could be implemented. And the reason why I say that is that gives us the time to say, okay, you know what? The court said no to this, and then we're going to have to pivot. Or the court said yay to this, and we're going to have to pivot in that direction. Because the reality is right now, and this goes to what Valerie's been saying the entire time, and, you know, this is her first time saying this. This is not new. There is no such thing as Sigma and water rights being the same thing, right? Sigma itself is contradictory to existing law associated with distribution of water by right. So at some point, those things are going to have to be justified in the court system. That's happening right now. And even the ones, and I know that Duncan will say this, will openly admit, even the ones that these gentlemen have been working on have seen either litigation or the threat of litigation associated with them, even though they've gone through this entire long-term process and come up with an outcome that seemed to have communal buy-in, that didn't affect it. So the second part of it is time frame. I am not hearing a lot of openness to continuing the process down the road. I am hearing a lot of get this thing done. And so I just want to caution you that we should probably be as prepared as we possibly can for not being able to extend this thing of any significant duration. And in that auspice, I would like to say that I am willing to just say, put together a straw proposal. This straw proposal looks like I hear everything that you're saying, so let's take into consideration the timeliness of implementation so that we make sure we don't get ourselves in trouble legally, and we let that happen as much as possible. So say 5 years from now would be the very first restriction we can put in place, right? So give this thing time. And so then we know, right? Then we're clear on where it's going to be. All the court cases should be done by then, even including appeals, right? You should be all the way down that road in 5 years. So the second thing is, you know, I hear the issues with, you know, what constitutes when you would take action, right? So triggers. And I know that there has been a lot of discussion about the inaccuracy of data points for creating things like sustainable yield or creating things like how much water goes into the system and therefore can be taken out, right? And I understand that. So, you know, it is my belief that that should have something like triggers associated with groundwater levels. Because ultimately...
that you can measure.
Yes, ultimately, that will be the matrix by which DWR judges us anyway.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter how much water you say you saved. If your groundwater continues to fall, they're not going to care.
Right.
So you can report that you saved 1 billion acre feet. But if your groundwater level falls, they're going to be like, yeah, so what? So ultimately, probably our triggers for action are going to have to be associated with that matrix that they're going to use. I think that whatever program you put in place should have the most flexibility for farmers to make decisions about how they want to take action. Because the reality is that everybody who is in the business, A, knows better how to do it on their farm than we would ever be able to. And B, is going to have sort of a different view on what's the best mechanism for them to use. And so you give suites of things that you can use to reduce water. This is the incentive-driven part. And then you give something in the restrictive measures that also allows credit for those incentive-driven ideas and however you do them. And so once you get to this area when you're running those restrictions, there has to be a credit back program for work that you already have done. So during this 5 years, that even allows agriculturalists to build up credits towards those long-term incentives over time, right? So you don't get penalized for doing work early. Because ultimately, we all want to see the greatest amount of incentivized work and the smallest amount of penalized work, right? I think we're all on that same page. And if we can get something like that together, then I think we maybe will have gotten there. And I have some ideas about how to do that. I need to put them on paper for you guys to look at, because explaining them verbally isn't easy. And it's going to take me just a little bit of time to do that anyway. And I would like, 2 months to put that on paper, a couple months to put that sort of straw proposal on paper and what that looks like. But I want to get it in front of you guys because I want to start working on away from this part, right? This section of, hey, here's the impacts, here's what you can do, and here's this looks. I want to start working on, hey, here's a sort of a real program feel, right? And we can start talking about those elements that are going to have to be put into this framework. And I think that will help us move this thing along. I think if we can get really far down the road, right, where we have this sort of robust look at what a program will be, I think we have a lot more chance to, get the board's buy-in, even if it isn't perfect on January 1st, 2026, right, to do some elements later and kind of figure some of these bits out, and B, get DWR's buy-in that we've done enough. Because what I'm reading from DWR, they're really saying sort of do what you said you're going to do in their responses. And so I want to make sure that we have enough so that we don't risk them calling us out on you didn't do enough to do what you said you're going to do. Right? Does that make sense? I don't want to risk the really expensive measures that come after that. And I don't want to risk the board saying no to extending it in time. So ultimately, I think if we can get a straw proposal together that we're working on and we're working towards something that looks like a structural element for real with these things in it, even if it isn't perfect at the end, I think we'll have satisfied those that are ultimately going to make the decision whether or not it's good enough. Does that make sense? And I know that there's some, hesitance to make sort of finalized decisions because it's, scary, and I don't like it either. But the reality is if we give ourselves that sort of that break, that time frame, some time before those real implementation dates, that gives us the ability to say, hey, we just found out that that's not a good way to go. Let's all get together in a room and figure out how we can fix it. Does that make some sense?
This is Ian. Yeah. I think one of my concerns is this is all being paid for with funding subsidies and grant money. And that's why one of the reasons I'm looking at it, they made, Corning Subbasin made commitments of January 1, 2027, not 26.
Yep.
And doing all this with the grant money intended for Corning Subbasin. So let's get it the best we can in that time frame.
And I think you'll find that, even in talking to the consultants, I know that, a fully detailed out program by 2026 feels like some lift that's not possible, right? It feels like this huge thing. And that may well be true, but I think that we can get it far enough along to where we have the basic outline from them. We have the basic outline for us, right, about what elements we want in this program. And then we can present that and see, hey, we need time to work on these finalized details. And I think that CSAB and the Corning Subbasin is going to want to be at that point too. Because if you're not there by then, you're going to be struggling to meet that 2027 deadline of a realistic implementable program anyway. Does that make, do you know what I'm saying by that?
I know what you're saying. I think that the Glenn County side wants to be more engaged. Needs to be more engaged, whether it's through CSAB or some other mechanism. And, you know, they've said as much numerous times.
Yep. Well, I'll just tell you this. I've tried to make meetings for us to meet with them on multiple occasions for a very, very long time now, and I've been unsuccessful at making that happen. So
I don't know what to
regardless talk. Of that desire, it's not happening. And so, you know, at some point we've got to keep going or, you know, there's going to be a problem. So,
but yeah, something certainly that can also be brought up into the CSAB meeting later on is a better understanding, like, what does that involvement look like? What, how can we fit that within the timeline? Because even with that 225,000, even with, like, Corning's supposed to get theirs up by January 2027, the grant itself is done in 2026.
So you got to spend that money by then anyway.
So again, like, this is like trying to find a in between for like understanding that there's like a ton of complexity with developing these demand management programs. There's analyses and those things take time, and like, and just having something that's robust that has like, that tries to minimize like legal risk and those various things, like acknowledging that that process is complex and takes time. That said, there, we have discussed enough ideas and embedded enough ideas to start putting some pen to paper such that we can start moving forward on parallel paths and get some momentum and demonstrate enough progress to get us to address the what we've been hearing from the board and DWR. So this is trying to get, like, let's start moving both balls down the field. We know you play with two footballs in the game. Want to pause, though, Justin, Eddie, are there anything that you want to kind of add in terms of time? And then, by the way, Duncan dropped off somehow. I don't know if he's having a technical issue, but Jeff's still here. But just wanted to let you know that Duncan's not online. Eddie, anything else that you kind of want to add that's kind of, like, consider as we're trying to move forward?
I don't. I mean, I think the only thing I would suggest is that great if we could do a regional approach so everybody's doing the same thing, but maybe that's not going to work out. But I don't know how the folks are going to be. I don't know how it's all going to work.
I get a bunch of different stories.
But another reason why it's getting the green light for the tech memo, be able to think of CSAB is all kind of helping to support that. Like, if there can be a regional approach, this tech memo can be kind of help make sure that things are aligned. So again, the next steps is both like the tech memo being finalized within the next couple of months, Justin working on the initial straw proposal in the next couple of months, and bringing so that way we can bring both back. And then there's going to be, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Question for you. This is Ian. So what is your definition of a program versus what you've seen here? You're concerned.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know that I have a good answer. I want to see an approach to demand management come out of this. I would like to see the different demand management options evaluated, which I think is what we're going to see relative to, you know, in the case of our fallowing program, how many acres we're talking about, how realistic is that as far as, you know, ag development, you know, in the county, how does future ag development feed into this equation? So it, bottom line, is it feasible? And we don't have that information yet. We haven't seen those numbers yet. And I don't, you know, which I don't, and I'm hoping to see those numbers soon. So I do want to see recommendations come out of this effort with respect to, you know, is an incentivized fallowing program feasible? what can our expectations, what are our goals for whatever period of time? And if it, and so I would like to be able to make those calls in the process. But I think if we get there, we've got a lot. So that's my goal for this. So I'm not sure if that's realistic or not.
Thanks.
Hey, okay. Yeah, Stephanie. So yeah, this is Jeff here. Just real quick, wanted to jump in, and I guess I what I've been listening for is kind of these guiding principles to kind of float up in the conversation. So I just wanted to quickly repeat those for the group and just let them kind of marinating over the next time until the next meeting here. But Mike, obviously, Michael, we've heard, you know, a lot of good thoughts about the idea of minimizing negative impacts on small growers and ensuring equity between small and larger growers. So I kind of have that down in our notes as a potential guiding principle to kick around. Justin, in your comments, one of the things I heard about that might become a guiding principle is to provide incentives or some sort of crediting for increasing direct and in-lieu recharge activities and investments. So that might be kind of one of the guiding principles, is to make sure these programs are incentivizing that type of action. And then the last one was, and this gets, I think, to a lot of folks' comments, is basically it's hard to make decisions in the absence of certainty or in the face of significant uncertainty, maybe is a better way to put it. And so I think the idea of the ability to adapt these incentive-driven and allocation approaches over time as better and more information becomes available and sub-basin conditions evolve, I think is really critical. So hopefully that kind of gives you a little bit more of a comfort level if this is not set in stone, but it's an adaptive thing that periodically is you know, reviewed and revised to be reflective of current understanding. So you don't have to make a decision for the next 20 years, basically. And hopefully that'll free you all up to feel a bit more confident in moving forward in the face of that uncertainty. So just wanted to flag those kind of guiding principles as maybe a starting point for that conversation.
Thanks so much, Jeff. And I know that you have to actually hop off pretty soon, but and we're pretty close to the top of the hour. So these are the next steps, pretty much. And so want to pause if folks are, if there's any red flags, like that, to voice them, let Justin and the technical consultants know. They're going to be moving forward with the technical ML framework document. The straw proposal, again, the timeline for those to bring back something in the next couple months. There's the cloning side conversations. And I'll flag that, you know, as folks have mentioned, is, you know, ensuring that the board's kind of supporting this direction that we're going. I've heard from Ian and others that there's a concern of whether or not is the board going to be saying, like, that's not enough. Is DWR going to say that's not enough? So there's the getting the buy-in from those folks. I don't know, Ian, you're also referring, when thinking of buy-in, you're also thinking of, like, the broader public.
Yeah.
So there's...
Regard to what you were saying about current litigation, who knows? You know, who knows whether it would have been a lot worse had the approach been different.
We're all better. You know, yeah.
Or you don't know. You can't tell. And in general, I think that the more people feel that they have a stake in it and are engaged, and the more transparent it is, the less problems you'll have.
David, this is Michael Ward. And I don't know if this is a guiding principle, but I think it needs to be part of this discussion somehow. And this is, you know, I think our focus really are on areas that were overdraft, and that's not all of the Red Bluff Subbasin. It's a significant portion of the Red Bluff Subbasin. One of the things we don't talk about are areas that are sustainable. We have areas that are seeing very little decline in groundwater elevations, and we seem to be ignoring that. But as far as demand management goes, I think our goal would be to maintain that sustainability. So somehow I feel that is at least part of the discussion here.
You know what is interesting. I sort of had in my mind a discussion about this, you know, today. And I think you're totally right. I know that we talked about sort of breaking this down into these really sort of finite, small grain areas, right, where we could potentially have reactions that are on that small of a subcategory. But I'm hearing you guys that that might be a little problematic, and maybe that's too fine granular. I have some ideas that I'm going to put in the straw proposal about how to make those in sort of bigger chunks, right, that have, you know, similar characteristics where we can say, hey, this area, you know, these are all going to share similar characteristics, so the triggers will have these effects when you do this, this area similar, so we can break it up into some, still using our sort of polygon methodologies, but put it in more of a large grain,
yeah,
right? So we can kind of bunch these things a little bit more together. So I think you guys are right that if we do it in that small, we're going to have some funky issues to try to make it work. So
and Jeff, I'm sorry I called David. I
figured it, and I respond to either David or Jeff because I know David's is close to a first name, so it's one of those risky last names. But yeah, no, I appreciate your comment, and I think that you know, maintaining and encouraging sustainability where it already exists is certainly a key part of that. And of course, that's part of you know, investing in surface water supplies, right? So that you're not using groundwater, you know, year after year after year, to the extent that surface water supplies are available and that sort of thing are certainly key to that, Michael. So yeah, I really, really appreciate that. And I do have to drop off, guys. So thank you so much and look forward to the subsequent conversations here.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're kind of close to the where there are just a lucky hour. That's my where all the matters. There it is. All right. So it sounds like there's no red flags that we're going to move forward. Justin's going to move forward with putting some pen to paper on the straw proposal. Duncan and Jeff are moving forward with writing up the second memo. And then everyone's kind of moving forward with what they're going to be taking and working with on with CSAP, the Corning side. One of the questions, though, is that our next kind of standard meeting, once we're like back on the regular fourth Wednesday, is April 23rd. That will have put to the group of whether or not, considering like two things are going to be expected in 2 months, do folks still want to meet at the end of April, or do folks want to just meet again in May?
Yeah,
to meet in May or
no? There's just so much things to be done. I really any missing any opportunity to get together to discuss this. And too bad they're not on the call. You know, but maybe there must be some piece of work that they can be focused on that we can get back, you know, in a couple of weeks or a few weeks and begin to.
So can I just make one comment about
that?
I want them to get your 2 month deadline. If we break them out all the time to prep stuff for meetings and come into these bits, we risk them not doing that. And ultimately, it would be my recommendation that you give them those 2 months to do it. And then they come in and we do this because I'm scared.
Okay.
It's a tight timeline and I'm scared they don't do it.
How would we do this? Instead of bothering them, focusing them, one of the things that I guess I have concern with is our data. We've talked about our data. How is our, there's a question as to how our rates of decline were calculated, as an example. I have a question on the data that's in our data viewers now. I would like to, you know, maybe we don't need to meet in a room, but a Zoom call, I think, might be appropriate where we can discuss what was the process for determining safe yield, what's the process to determining overdraft, does our data viewer reflect that? Right now, I don't think it does. What other data do we need to put in the data viewer at this point? It's something we have to get this data question behind this. So whatever it takes to do that, I would
that would benefit all of us.
So to the top of the hour, so I was like, based off of one year, here's what I'm going to propose. Let's assume that if there is an April 23rd meeting, whether it's a Zoom call, whether it's in person, to be determined, assume that the technical consultants will not be on that call, so that way they can be focusing on their work. We might do an April 23rd check-in. It could be on have better, like, revisiting the data component. Todd earlier had also mentioned Valerie's, so a conversation, maybe a better understanding of the legal risks at play. So there's various topics that we could theoretically discuss in the latter part of April. And there's always, you can reach out to the ad hoc to kind of like vet some ideas, to kind of better understand, like, what if we met in April 23rd, what would that look like? But Eddie, I saw.
Well, I think one question, which, I mean, again, data concerns, but step back a little bit, like guiding principles. Okay, what are those? You're going to get into the weeds on the data, spend another 5 months on the data, which I get. At some point, we need to address it, but why not focus in on, like, the guiding principles? Like, okay, what are your protectives? You know, those kind of ideas. That's something that everybody can kind of contribute.
I like that, too. So,
thank you. So, we have a couple, we have several items that we could talk about in last part of April that are dependent on the technical consultants being present. So
can I ask you guys a little bit of can I assign you with a little bit of homework, please, that we can, each of you can think of what you would like as sort of, you know, a baseline principle, a guiding principle, how this thing, you know, should move forward. It doesn't need to be complicated, and it does not need to be super in-depth, just sort of the basics so that we can say, so we can start talking about those things and get them, you know, put forward. What do you want?
And send them to us. I can compile it. We have, like, that Google sheet that folks all have access to, so that's space that we can keep it all compiled and you'll have access to.
And then if we can get enough together, then maybe we can schedule a 23rd meeting to talk about that. Does that seem reasonable and fair to everybody?
What are some examples of what you're looking for?
You know, like
the time frame, you know, for implementation?
No, that could be a possible guiding principle, but also things like if you want to, you know, concentrate on, you know, the economic benefit to one party over another, who you want this thing to affect and how. If there's something that says, hey, we hate the idea of forcing people to do this particular action, right? Those sorts of things, these sort of generalized thoughts on, we do think that this is a good idea and we don't think that this is a good idea. I know and they're going to be different, by the way. I fully expect that, and that's a good thing. And if we can get the sort of list together of, hey, you know, hey, we want to provide benefits to small farmers to the greatest extent possible so that we can protect them from, you know, going under based on these actions, you know, things of that nature.
Yeah. On that one, I mean, that's already been conveyed, that concept, to figure out what that looks like. We've got to see what the action items are.
Oh,
right. To assess that. So I don't know that we can do anything on that yet.
But anything that like that, that you guys want as a principle, like, for example, we want this to be open and transparent as possible so that we can get anybody's involvement that we possibly can. That's a guiding principle, right? Those sorts of things. So well, if you have any of those that were not here.
Yeah, exactly. Things have changed, right? I mean, like 5 years, reevaluate this.
You want ultimate flexibility so you can make decisions moving forward. You know, just sort of those types of things. I mean, I think I got you guys pretty good, but if something's going to come, this might fish out something I haven't thought of. Does that make sense?
All right. It's 5 minutes after, so I just want to close out for anyone who's calling in and listening. But I think we have a good game plan, and we will be in touch with the April 23rd. It's kind of tentative, whatever that looks like. Well, I know. I'm like, that clock is throwing
that
out.
That clock's way wrong. I have one question. How do we get, and who can give us somewhat of a comprehensive list of these incentive-driven concepts? Because that's part of the consideration, right?
Yeah,
so we have an idea of how big of a swing or impact those might have, right? It's kind of critical.
I'll send out a list of everyone that I've ever heard of. I know them pretty well, what is available. I can send you guys that list. We compile these sort of data resources of what programs do, so, you know, we have a pretty good list of what's possible, and I think we can do that for you.
All right, thanks just for putting that, compile that list. All right, I'm going to close off that way the folks calling in can move on with their day. And I know also that some folks have to start transitioning over to Corning, so I want to keep you all moving forward. So thanks, everyone, for calling in. I know that there is a little mistake with the call-in information, so apologies for inconvenience there. We have recorded, though, the audio, so the audio will end up being posted to the website after the next groundwater commission meeting. So thank you, everyone.
Thanks, next commission meeting.